It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, Editor-at-Large at Search ERP. AI and robotic process automation have arrived in the finance department. They're automating manual accounting tasks like invoice reconciliation and the monthly close, and the analytics for fraud detection, financial planning, and risk analysis. But can CFOs find the AI expertise they need? Is AI mature enough to handle critical financial and compliance work? We'll discuss these issues with independent consultant Kimberly Ellison Taylor. She's a former board chair of the AICPA and longtime director and finance thought leader at Oracle. First of all, thank you, Kimberly, for joining us today.
I'm so delighted to be here.
There's been a lot going on with AI in the whole industry and in HR, all sorts of fields. It's been coming to finance now for a few years, but it seems like some of the efforts have been kind of fledgling and minimal, like more, maybe a little more talk than action. So I'm wondering how you would describe the state of maturity of AI in finance right now.
I think, David, we are pretty much at the awareness phase, if I had to say across the board, but we have episodes of having operationalized AI in different aspects, mostly because we have an application that drove us more into this area than not. And I'm hoping that through just the heightened awareness and then getting up to speed with what it means and use cases and agile release trains. And it's so awesome when I hear, you know, finance colleagues talking about agile release trains, that we're going to see more AI driving and enabling some of the decisions that are being made in the marketplace. And so it just makes sense that our finance colleagues are using it as well.
Are there specific applications that you feel are particularly far along now or some of the more advanced uses of AI in finance?
So I wear two hats. So I wear this finance hat and I wear this technology hat. When I'm with my CIO colleagues, I say, we really need finance to start leading these areas because technology is an enabler and we don't want technology to be given a black eye because it's not meeting whatever the mission and objectives are, but what it ultimately is just a tool. And so to answer your question, when I go and speak with the finance colleagues, I am talking about, okay, so how is it helping you improve your decision-making? How is AI helping you to be more assistive and answering questions and being responsive to your clients, internal and external? So I do see a lot of it happening with chatbots and digital assistants. I see us using AI as it relates to risk and identifying risk because we don't like that F word, which is fraud. So we're already going to be attuned to looking for anomalies and thresholds that are exceeded because they could be triggers to indicate that something's happening that shouldn't. We see AI also being used to help with credit decisions, helping with whether or not we have the right reports in place and other thresholds to help us assess risk and manage risk at the same time. But also we see more and more of it during this whole financial planning and whether or not we can do cash liquidity assessments and analysis as it relates to investments and using AI to supplement the insights that we could bring. Because there's no way that any one person could analyze the wealth of data that's out there. And I think our finance colleagues know that. So even as I talk to the CIOs, I'm talking to the CFO saying, we can lead these projects because technology is an enabler, but you have the business-oriented mission that it needs to really add context to why we're doing it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so I do see it at the low-hanging fruit level. And I think it's also in the ERP systems and also in the financial planning systems, but not as pervasive and not as consistent as I think it should be or could be.
When I first started looking at this, it seemed as if the AI was in finance was being applied in two major areas. There was the analytics, so sort of like supercharging analytics for financial planning and analysis, looking at lots of data for fraud, that kind of thing. But then there were also the more process-oriented things, some of which weren't technically AI, I think, that are like bots that can do logic trees and kind of respond to different processes. And it looked like there were two main threads or channels that
this AI and the bot technology were going in finance. I guess, first of all, do you kind of agree with that characterization? And if so, how would you compare the two in terms of their importance?
So two great points that you've made, and I'll take the one, which would be financial planning, and then I'll take the other one about whether or not it's helpful as it relates to other decisions about analytics. So David, as you know firsthand, the last 18 months have been just hell. It's just been unbelievable. Not even just because it's a part of our day-to-day lives and have been upended, you know, our loved ones not there anymore. We all at this point probably know someone directly who has had COVID. So we know firsthand what that looks like personally. But then from a business perspective, we've had businesses that were iconic, not here anymore. It placed, I think, a bullseye view on the function of financial planning and analysis, the forecasting capabilities that were needed to give the CEOs and the finance leaders the data that they needed to go and speak to the shareholders. You know, should we be worried? What should our concerns be? Where can we cut some corners? Where can we, you know, shave off some of these expenses? And what are, quite frankly, as we look at this data, some things that we shouldn't do again? And so I think that we did see a lot more use of AI and probably some machine learning in financial planning and forecasting because we had to. There was no other choice. For organizations that were getting by using spreadsheets, I think it was working for them. So whenever we would have the conversation about, oh, when are you going to give up those spreadsheets? It's a hard conversation to have when it might take them three times as long, but they were getting the work done. And then all of a sudden, you're in this environment where every parameter, every risk factor that you could imagine was up in the air. There is no way that your pivot tables, no matter how sophisticated and awesome they are, so I don't want to disparage the pivot tables, but there was no way that they could do it all. And so I just think that some of the heroes internally were definitely in that FP&A function. And I think that we are using AI to supplement all of the various scenarios and the models that were being used to determine, are we okay for the next 3 months? Are we okay for the next month? And that's what I think when we start talking about having a source of truth. What data are we using and who is going to feel comfortable reporting on that data and saying it out to the media and out to the world if there's not some rigor and consistency and some volume and qualitative, quantitative analysis to enrich that whole data, you know, report before you even put it out there. So definitely we started seeing AI in financial planning, and not because all of our colleagues thought it was, you know, what they wanted to do. I think they just had no other choice if they were going to be vibrant and relevant to this whole discussion. Mm-hmm. Now, as it relates to analytics, I am in conversations with individuals and analytics comes up every single time. And I think that's partly because the technology is now becoming so pervasive that we don't have to crunch out the numbers. We don't have to do the manual traditional accounting anymore. We can look to insights. What does the data tell us? What story is it saying? What does it tell us about where we have opportunities, where our competitors are having a greater penetration than we are, that there should be other market areas that we should get into? We have products that should be selling better, but they're not, or they're selling extremely well. And we want to know why. We want to question the good and the bad, because the good we certainly want to keep doing. And the bad, we want to figure out, let's not do that anymore. So I think AI is riding also on this wave of necessity. It's riding on this wave of a pivot and reshift in the marketplace. And I think that there are some definite concerns that we should always be aware of. But I also think that as we talk about transformation, that this isn't a 3 to 5 year conversation that I think we were having before. I think it's right now.
Now, did you want to say anything about the process side? Because doing standard financial processes that involve moving documents around and maybe collecting data and just making sure it's all in the right place and doing the closing and all that. That's a big time sink also. And I think AI, and then the even the AI equipped and sometimes regular non-AI chatbots can help, I guess, with that sort of workflow. Do you think that has an important role also in finance?
Absolutely. And you know what's so interesting as you say that, David, because I think AI is kind of the parent of all of these other, you know, related functions like robotics process automation, which really does help with the processing. So when we're talking about how can we automate manual business processes, how can we simplify workflows, how can we improve our customer interactions, how can we reduce the opportunity for fraud, how can we speed up the timeframe it takes us from quarter close to earnings release, how can we ensure that we minimize the exceptions to the extent possible. Because if you're not using technology and AI, and in this case, it's child robotics process automation, that means you've hired someone you're paying good money to actually sit down and go through, and I have heard this, 15 to 16,000 manual transactions that are being kicked out of the system for one reason or another.
Wow.
So that's why it's important to have an ERP solution that can help you get to what I have to say, Oracle's amazing at its own story, to one single instance chart of accounts and leveraging all of the things that Oracle's already doing in its own environment that's plugged into the ERP EPM solutions, and then leveraging that so you don't have 20,000 manual transactions and journal entries that are being corrected. You can speed up the consolidation process. You are reducing the wait and chase for data to figure out how to close the books and get them done in an efficient manner. And AI is definitely a part of that because it's driving the business processes. It's nudging people. It's saying, hey, it's you. You're up next. Mm-hmm. And it's your turn. And automating that workflow so that we are maybe just getting down to exceptions. And we can speed up the timeframe from close to earnings release. And so that helps us get to more, you know, insight faster. Because once you can free up the executives from having to go out and chase all this data and get it back out into the marketplace, now that frees them up to start thinking about, okay, what are we going to do next? How are we going to drive more revenue? And so AI, and in this case, the example I'm using would be robotics process automation or intelligent, you know, driven processes inside your, you know, AI or ERP systems, I think it's going to be really key and really important.
So you mentioned Oracle. You spent a lot of years there. I think it was 17 years, I think, something
yes.
like that.
Yes. Can you believe that? I'm only 17.
I'm going to take a while to beat your record at TechTarget. I have quite a few years to go. But anyway, yeah, that's pretty good. 17. Most people don't stay at one company so long.
Right.
But you, while there, one of the many things you did was you started a center of excellence. And so I'm wondering if you could talk about what that was, why it was important, and maybe how it can help if it's relevant to this AI and finance effort that's going on.
You know, that's a great point. And I would say, you know, tag team with all of the amazing finance leaders, because one of the things I did immediately was just find my kindred spirits inside Oracle. Who's got a CPA? I mean, I met chartered accountants. There were people from all over the globe who are weighing in, because one of the first things you have to consider would be table stakes. The table stakes are always going to be what the regulators are expecting, whatever markets that you're in. And so having people with those credentials and backgrounds are going to be really important. And so I don't know if any one person can claim that they started the Center of Excellence, but I know we all can say we're stakeholders and we provided insight and guidance to it. And one of those really key areas I'm proud of would be modern, you know, best practice. And I work very closely with Steve Cox and the whole finance team, the whole product marketing team, on developing and looking at business processes that leverage emerging technologies. I teach emerging technologies for Carnegie Mellon. And so it's exciting to me to think about the use cases that are in the marketplace and that are available. But it's also important to me to look at business processes like, you know, quote to cash, or whether it's procure to pay or some of the other business processes that we're using on a regular basis, in this center of excellence with so many amazing people, including who I would give a lot of credit to is Steve Cox. Those are individuals who are looking at over 1,600 different business processes are listed in Oracle Modern Best Practice, and it's listed online. Because there are people who want to know, how do you get social analytics, Internet of Things, and some of the AI, machine learning, robotics process automation using the web and other technologies? How do you get those embedded inside the process? How do you not do business as usual? How do you not just take something because it's commonplace and then call it best practice? Just because it's commonplace and everyone's been doing it doesn't mean that it's best practice. Best practice is going to be a solution that leverages technology in a way that is enabling the business. It's always got to be first, right? Technology for the sake of technology doesn't work. Now, maybe David, that's the CPA side of me. I don't know, but I do know that it's got to make sense for the organization. And at the same time, it also has to fit in with long-term where the corporation or the company of all sizes are going. So this center of excellence is needed because people will know that they need to transform, but they don't know how, and they don't know where to start. And having business processes that are kind of mapped for you gives you a place to start. Having Oracle's example, Oracle on Oracle, is a great place to start. And looking at Oracle's example on things we did in our own environment is certainly also a place to start. And I think customers have responded very positively to it. I think business partners have responded very positively to it because no one wants to start with a plain sheet of paper.
Right.
People actually do want to leverage what other people are doing because why should they make the same mistakes that someone else has made? Why not leverage those technologies to their benefit?
Was this center of excellence both for best practices that you could then put in products and for internal Oracle practices like in finance and all sorts of other business processes? Was it fulfilling a dual role?
Absolutely. I think what happens is this. We have amazing engineers. We have amazing people who did that, done that, because you always got to have the people who did that, done that. And here I am saying we, and I haven't been at Oracle since March. So old habits, David, die hard, because through and through, I was at Oracle and totally vested in the solutions and believed in the mission of what Safra and Larry say on a regular basis. So it is going to take me a while not to say we, when I mean them, but I will tell you that having being in sync with what we're putting forth in the marketplace with the messaging and also promising without results wouldn't make any sense. So we want to have the results that reflect all of the various promises. And that's what you see in modern best practice. Examples of people who have done it, examples of things that have worked. And I would say a jump start. Now, that's how you leapfrog ahead and not start from ground zero. And having the development team also at least, you know, look at it and be invested in that process as well, I think is important.
This past spring, Oracle partnered with a research firm called Savanta on a big survey. It was thousands of respondents that showed a very high trust level among millennials and Gen Z people in using AI and bots for finance processes. So what do you think, first of all, are the implications of this for finance departments?
I think it's a wake-up call, actually. I mean, I read it and then I had to read it twice because I wanted to make sure I understood what it was saying. And I think after this, you know, reading it over and working through the survey results, I get it. And I think it is a call to action. I think we are right now in this great resignation. And while a survey would have had no knowledge or knowing that we would be exactly where we are right now, but everything it said is kind of stateless because it would apply whether we're talking about 2020, 2021, or 2022. And it basically just says, we are a little concerned. We trust technology. We feel uncomfortable if you don't trust technology. And we're not sure if we want to come work with you if you're going to have us working with dinosaur chisel and tablets. And so because it's an employee's market, they can choose where they want to go and work. And so the survey says they trust it a lot more probably than we would have trusted it at that same age, because it was still kind of unknown to us. They've grown up with technology, so their relationship is a little bit different. The trust is a little bit different. And I just think that if you're a finance leader looking for talent, and you can't say that modern technology is on your value proposition list, and you can't say that this is how you're wooing people in, you're going to free them up so that they can do some really cool strategic things, because they're going to be buried in reports or trying to do all those manual journal entries and reconciliations, you're going to be in trouble. So we have no choice, David. We got to move.
So it's a particular problem, you think, for finance departments?
I think it's a problem across the board. Mm-hmm. I just think right now we're in particular talking about finance. And I think that as it relates to attracting people to the field of finance, we have to adopt a lot of these are really cool use cases. Maybe you don't do them all, but we have to adopt some of them that make sense for our business, because we don't want to be shown up. If I just take the pure function of finance and take my technology hat off, we don't want to be shown up by all of the discussions about analytics and it's so sexy and the young people want to go and do the cool things. We want to be cool. I think we do. I think we want to be cool. We want to be cool.
Even CPAs want to be cool. Yes.
Yes. We have to be cool, David. We got to be cool.
Same thing's going on in HR. I think they want to be cool too. Yeah.
Everybody's got to be cool. So I don't think any group, to answer your question, I don't think any group can say, we don't have to worry about talent. Everyone's looking for talent. They're looking for amazing, high-performing talent. And your amazing, high-performing talent that is a go-getter, they've got grit and determination. They could be in your succession plan within a couple of years to take your role and maybe another five. They're not going to come and work with you if you're way behind this technology curve.
You know, when I read that survey, I thought, should they really be so trusting of that technology? Because it's still fairly new. And I truly was a bit surprised that they are so trusting. And so I'm wondering if you've wondered about that yourself. Like, you think it's just because in general they trust technology maybe more than people, or that I found it a little mystifying that they trusted that technology so much for financial processes in particular.
Well, it is interesting, but think about it, David. We trusted our money is in the bank. I mean, I think my dad wanted to put his money under the mattress, but I'm thinking you're putting our money under the mattress, but that's what made him, you know, on a serious note, he had a paper check. My dad never did electronic funds transfer, never. Mm-hmm. And although we tried to get him to use, you know, technology and get it deposited into his account, he just didn't trust it. And yet for me, I don't even carry a check in my purse. Mm-hmm. So I would say maybe not as far as our millennial and Z colleagues, but if you really think about how we do banking, I think we trust it quite a bit. I would dare say though, the whole giving your data out into the marketplace and putting everything out about yourself. Now I'm a little hesitant about that, because I know on the security questions that we could probably go out, depending on who it is, and answer their questions, because they put so much about their personal information out there, and that they should be a lot more cautious than they are. But I do think that it's because they grew up with it, and every aspect of their lives, AI and is a part of it. And so they don't have any hesitance because they don't know what it was like before. They only know this environment that we're in right now.
There's certainly a growing awareness about using AI in other areas like HR, and that if you do that, there can be a black box problem. You know, the notion that you don't really know how the AI is doing what it does, whether you can trust it, how are you going to understand it? And so part of the reaction of that, a big reaction of that, is this push for explainable AI and also like algorithmic auditing to make sure the AI is working within certain parameters that the company sets and certain legal parameters in some case. So I'm wondering, Kimberly, is there also a black box problem in using AI in finance?
Absolutely. And I would say that because from an algorithm perspective, when the external auditors come in, before they even get there, the internal auditors are on deck. And understanding how the process actually happens, the logic that is applied, and what happens when exceptions occur, absolutely must be determined. And I would say the controls around it have to be tested, especially when we're talking about this heightened cybersecurity environment. So it is important to know how we got the answer and how the processes are occurring. But it's also important to understand from a third-party perspective, who can even make changes to the algorithms, because that's a whole internal controls environment that we need to investigate as well. And I suspect, depending on whether it's over financial controls or not, financial reporting, it'll be definitely something that we're looking at for, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley or something, when we're looking at management assertions over the integrity of the financial reporting. Or if there's something that goes wrong, it might be part of the evidence chain that happens when people go back to try to figure out what happened. And so we, I think, increasingly are going to hear more and more about this. I don't know exactly how or what, but it just makes sense to me, because we were auditing at one point around the computer and now we're going through it because we have experts that come on board. I have no doubt we'll have people who are experts in data lakes and all kinds of data models and data analytics that can assess the integrity of the systems that are supporting, you know, those data environments. And also the same thing for AI and algorithms. We definitely should be paying attention, because with great power comes great responsibility. And I would be uncomfortable having something in my environment that I didn't understand who could change, how it worked, and how the decisions are processed.
What do you think are going to be the biggest obstacles that CFOs and other people, finance professionals, others working in that department are going to face in the near term as they try to bring AI more into the finance function?
I think it's going to be around the people. So people have a fear, especially now, the ones who have been on deck and with you for years and years and may not be a part of the great resignation, but who knows, maybe they are. I think they're going to be concerned that it's going to replace their roles. And I think that the CFOs are going to have to be chief communicators, often, frequent, directly, and using every mode of communication possible to get it across to the team that they are essential and you need them, so that they don't go and leave because you need them to help with this transformation effort that you might have underway. And then I think it's also you're flying a plane and serving a coffee. You're so busy that you can't stop to do the work that would help you not be busy. But if you don't stop and do the work that will help you not be busy, you'll always be in this cycle of probably doing at least 30 to 40% of work that could be automated, and also doing 30 to 40% of costs that are just happening in duplication in your environment because you didn't leverage as much technology as made sense. And then, of course, you run the risk of your clients and customers not staying with you because there are other modern, more efficient and effective customers that will have lower costs that could support whatever their business needs are. And so being too busy is a good problem to have, but it's also a problem that makes us slow to adapt to new solutions.
I'm wondering what you think vendors of either ERP or some of the more specific sort of niche ERP tools need to do more of to try to get this AI technology into finance departments.
I think they have to prove it. You can't promise without proof. I think there needs to be a lot more use cases, probably a lot more proof of concepts, because we're hesitant. Finance people want to show me. They have been burned. They've had these bad cases and examples of when people said it was just add water. And then it's 5 years later and 10 million or twice as much money. And they have had these horror stories that are legitimate and real. And it's because we didn't do the re-engineering of the business processes before the software vendor shows up. So the software vendors have to encourage re-engineering of business processes. They have to explain what it means to be in the cloud versus on-prem and talk about the benefits. But they also have to share and be willing to share the use cases and hopefully some jumpstart templates that can help show me in real time that I'm not putting my career on the line when I do your implementation. And so I'm really excited that I've seen lots of Oracle customers realize great results, and then they come back and buy more, or they come back and service references and tell other people about their great experience. But I think in general, that's what software vendors are going to have to do more and more.
What should companies do, especially CFOs and people in charge of finance, what do they need to do to try to get more AI familiarity into their departments? Do they need to literally hire like data scientists into the department, or can they, should they be maybe trying to work with someone who does that for the entire company? It seems like there's kind of an expertise problem here that's really cropping up for a lot of different departments when it comes to AI.
It absolutely is, because David, I'm thinking, did I go in the right field? The rates that I'm hearing that the data scientists and analytics people are costing is daunting. But I would say that there are collaborations you can do, you know, 1099s. Plenty of people don't want to work for a full-time company anymore. Maybe it's train the trainer and you get someone that's willing to supplement your existing team members. Maybe it's your business partners and the vendors that you're using that can help you get up to speed. There are lots of conferences. The great thing now is about all of these YouTubes and LinkedIn learnings that are out there and available. Definitely can go out and read magazines and the environment in general. I just think there are lots of, I should say, websites where there's great information out in the marketplace. And I think we have to put an innovation team whose responsibility is to go out and keep their eyes open for these new areas of opportunity, and then figure out in the change management, political environment, low budget, you know, afforded to this function, figure out how to do all of that and come back with a recommendation. And then come out with a learning plan so that people feel comfortable with bringing on new solutions that they didn't necessarily come up with in their career, because AI still feels like Terminator and it still feels like the Matrix. So it's coming back. I mean, we're going to have the Matrix 4 out. So I think we're going to have we're going to have an uptick in AI. And I love those sci-fi movies. So, you know, too. I'll be right there.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a positive note to end it on. Kimberly, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me.